Today on Maine Calling, long-term care services and support in Maine. Families across Maine struggle to find safe, secure places for their aging loved ones to live. In the past decade, dozens of nursing homes in the state have closed. Plus, the state has a shortage of direct care workers who can help people stay in their homes. A new report shows that Maine needs about 400 more personal support aides and 187 nurses to close the care gap. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will examine this long-developing situation, learn about efforts to improve long-term care, and find out where Mainers can turn for help when caring for aging family members. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling On Demand is made possible in part by Maine Farmland Trust, working with farmers to grow the future of farming and food in Maine. Learn how you can get involved at mainefarmlandtrust.org/learn. By Welch & Forbes, working with clients to manage the full range of events that come with building wealth, from investments to trustee services. More at WelchForbes.com. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, supporting Maine island communities through education, health, and community engagement. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. It is often daunting for loved ones to find care for aging family members. Recent news of more nursing home closures only adds to the challenges. Today, we are going to learn about services and support to help older Mainers stay in their homes or find suitable long-term care. And we're going to talk about the larger issue here. My guest, Brenda Gallant, who is Executive Director of Maine's Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program. Paul Saussier, who is Director of the Office of Aging and Disability Services with the Maine Department of Health and Human Services. And Megan Walton, CEO of the Southern Maine Agency on Aging. We invite you to join the conversation. Have you had to navigate finding care for an aging family member? Do you have ideas of how it might be helped? Phone number is 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send us a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org or find us on Facebook or Instagram. Thank you all for being here today. And Paul, I'll start with you. For several years now, it seems that we've seen headline after headline about nursing home closures in Maine. And we will talk about that situation more deeply later in the program. However, I understand that nursing homes are just really one part of the picture when it comes to long-term care. And I'm wondering if you can kind of give us a panoramic sense of what we're talking about here. How many people in Maine need significant long-term care and where is it provided?
Yes, thank you, Jennifer. That's right. Nursing homes are an important part of the system for people who need them, but they serve a relatively small number of people, about 5,000. And we serve about 20,000 people in other parts of the care system with less intensity. And so that whole range of services is really important to people. It helps them stay independent when physical or cognitive changes start to happen and they can't do their daily tasks or their self-care, and yet they don't want to go to a nursing home or don't need to go to a nursing home yet. Adults consistently tell us they strongly prefer to be served in their communities and homes. And so for many people, long-term services and supports might start with some chores that they need help with. They're not unable to remove their snow anymore. They might need some housekeeping. They might need help with their laundry. And so those services are available in a variety of ways. Once people really need a lot more self-care, getting in and out of bed, using the bathroom, getting dressed, then they can have personal care aides come to the home to help them with those tasks and supplement what family or friends might be helping them with. There does come a time for some people when they're unable to live alone safely. And so that's when people might look at a residential care home, which doesn't provide the nursing level that a nursing home does, but it provides a room in a home, congregate meals, and that sort of thing. Or if they're in a position to be able to add an accessory dwelling unit, an ADU to their property or to someone else's property, a family member or a loved one, that might be a good option for them there. And then finally, for people who have very acute nursing needs on a daily basis, those are the folks who go to nursing homes.
And let me ask you this. You started the this answer by saying we serve. And when you say we serve about 5,000 people in nursing homes and about 20,000 people outside of nursing homes, this is the state of Maine. This number of 25,000 doesn't account for people who have private means. It doesn't account for people whose family members are caring for them and haven't sought help from the state, correct?
That's absolutely right, and a really good point to make. Long-term services and supports, most of it is provided by families privately. And even for people who don't have means, that's usually what families try to do first is provide the care themselves. So we don't have a good sense of how many people are out there, but we know from national studies that that's probably the majority of people. And by the time they come to us for public support for LTSS, long-term services and supports, they generally need help that goes beyond what they're able to provide in with their natural supports.
Okay, and I will move on to you, Brenda and Megan, in just a minute. But you said 5,000 people served by nursing homes, so it is not the majority of this group of people we're talking about. Yet at the same time, I can imagine that because these are people who are among the most fragile among us, that every nursing home closure is really catastrophic.
Yes, absolutely. It's been a very hard time for nursing homes and for the people who live in them, for the people who work in them. No question, it's unprecedented both here and in Maine in terms of what a challenge it has been to continue operating nursing homes, and we have seen closures. The state has made multiple rounds of rate increases and one-time supplemental payments to try to catch up to the situation. Most recently, a $20 million payment in December, for example, and there's another one scheduled for next month. But despite all of this, we continue to see closures. And so we've been working very closely with the Maine Healthcare Association and stakeholders to really change the way we pay nursing homes. Clearly, the current payment system is not keeping up. It looks backwards at what the facility has spent. And so in an environment of rapid inflation, it has been very difficult to keep up with the expenses in nursing homes. And so we will be implementing in January a forward-looking payment system that is really based on staffing levels that are appropriate for nursing homes, that rewards quality, that really works to reduce the contract labor, which has been a big issue there in nursing homes.
And we will hear from Angela Westhoff, who's president and CEO of the Maine Healthcare Association, in just a few minutes. Brenda, I want to turn to you. I've been interviewing you for a long time now. The lack of enough long-term care is an issue we've been talking about for a long time in Maine. It has been an issue for a long time, and as Maine ages, it has obviously not gone away, but in many ways gotten worse. There was a big commission a few years ago, issued recommendations. Several of the recommendations have been put in place. Can you tell us what those are and whether they've made a dent?
Well, fortunately, through all of this, there's a major focus now on workforce because, as you know, workforce really is really the engine, I think, that drives the whole long-term care system that really enables us to provide services both in the community and in long-term care facilities. So really through the commission, it recommended wage increases, which we did see. 125% of minimum wage must be provided across the continuum. That was passed by the legislature and funded. I know there were some federal dollars provided for bonuses for home care workers, and Paul could speak to that. So I think as a result of the commission and the focus on the shortage of the workforce, there's been a huge emphasis on really addressing workforce issues. And I think that's a really positive step for the state of Maine. We've looked at recruitment and retention, training. Our program established a direct care and support professional advisory council to bring workers together to create a strong voice on behalf of workers. We've brought workers to the legislature to meet with legislators and share information about their work. They've participated in recruitment campaigns, the most recent one being Careers with Purpose. So I think there's been a tremendous focus on workforce, which is really critical in terms of having adequate numbers of staff to provide care both in the community and facilities.
Brenda, I really appreciate that. I'm thinking, though, about this number, 125% of minimum wage. In much of Maine, that still doesn't approach a living wage anymore. I'm thinking it as much as has been done, it does still doesn't add up.
Well, I agree with you. The Maine Center for Economic Policy issued a report in June of this year, and they recommend that we get to at least 140% of minimum wage. We have two council members that work two jobs just to pay for housing. I think wages are a really a prominent and most important issue. We surveyed workers along with Maine Center for Economic Policy months ago, and wages were really a top consideration. So I think we really, to bring people more into the workforce, we need to look at wages, benefits, and additional benefits such as childcare on site. We have two nursing homes in Maine that provide that. I think that should be expanded. So there's really, it's going to take a huge effort, I think, to really bring more people into the workforce.
I want to turn to you, Megan. Despite the challenges, you have families every single day who are calling the agencies on aging around Maine in a situation where maybe they can no longer handle the needs of their aging loved ones whom they've been caring for from home. Maybe they're just confused about what the options are. Maybe they hear that a nursing home is closing. And so I sort of want to back up and sort of look at a broader view. When someone calls an agency on aging, what is available for them? What kind of support? What kind of services?
Thanks, Jennifer. And you're right. I mean, the great news is that we are all living so much longer. And I think the flip side of that is that our systems and our systems of care haven't caught up to that need. We just aren't quite there yet. And, you know, at the agencies on aging, we are seeing, of course, a number of calls, inquiries, appointments, just trying to navigate what is available and how do I find things and what applications do I need to fill out and can someone just walk me through this? So what I really want listeners to know is that the system is complicated. So if it feels that way, it's not you. It's the systems that we're operating within. And so that's why the agencies on aging are here, just to give you that kind of first stop to help explain things, to cut through some of the jargon that we hear so much about. That's why we're here. And of course, we offer a lot of services that people are familiar with. Services like Meals on Wheels. We offer a number of social dining activities out in our communities, thanks to our community partners. We have a number of health and wellness classes and workshops that people sign up for. Collectively, as agencies on aging, we have over 1,450 volunteers who really make this work happen. So it really does take a community to make sure, again, we're providing as much as we can in home and in the community where people want to live and where they want to age.
I'm going to go to our callers because so many people are already calling in. And I will start with Samantha, who's calling from Blue Hill. Hi, Samantha. Go ahead.
Hi. I have so many thoughts. First, I want to thank Brenda Gallant for her advocacy for my parents and for all this whole population. My parents both have experienced probably the hardest level, the most need in the nursing homes. My mom had juvenile diabetes. She passed 2 years ago. She was in lockdown for a year and a half over COVID, blind, and with dementia by the juvenile diabetes. And on a good day, she was constantly being seen by this rotating staff. And the experience of these patients is so difficult to express how awful it can be, even on a good day, because the system has permanent dementia. There is almost no institutional memory, let alone a continuity of care. Everybody that is working in these systems, I consider them all to be heroes, the dietitians, the PT people, the CNAs and the nurses. They've done their best, but everyone throws up their hands and they say how awful it is. But at the bottom line is that it is not care. I don't consider, and I would ask all the people here on the panel to consider what their definition of care actually is, because you can't throw money at care. You can't put a number on it. These are not just bodies in beds. My dad has been moved through 3 nursing homes because of the closures. And currently there is no nursing home available in Hancock County. So none of his family, we have to all travel over an hour and a half. His entire community is cut off from him, and I guess the last, it's just been a chain of horrors for my family. And I would like to say also that I keep thinking about this. Who we are is as good as how we treat the least of us. This is us. I'm a Gen Xer. This will be us. And I really am pleading with people who are listening, especially Gen Xers who are in the same boat, or anyone who's thinking about the ways of changing this. Let's talk about it now. I want to be available for people to make change now, so that hopefully by the time we get to this place, I feel so bad for the people that are in it now, but that we can finally get to a place that experiences an ethos of care.
Samantha, I think you've so articulately and passionately expressed the frustration that so many people have, and thank you for calling in and expressing that today. Paul, I'm going to turn to you first.
Yeah, thank you, Samantha, and thank you for sharing your story. And you're not alone in having huge challenges, especially with closures, and especially down east where there are very few options left for folks. I want to really address the continuity of care issue. We absolutely agree. We're working very closely with Maine Healthcare Association right now. As we implement a new system of payment, we really need to get the level of contract labor down. That's one of the things that creates constant daily turnover in a nursing home and makes it impossible to provide the care that people need. It makes it impossible to provide person-centered care where you really know what the individual's preferences are and whether they want their coffee at 8 o'clock or at 8:30. And we're delighted that Maine Healthcare is taking this challenge up with us. It is a big, troublesome spot in our system that grew during COVID because of staff shortages, and it's not going to be easy to get out of it, but it will improve continuity of care and also reduce costs for everybody.
All right. Well, we do need to go to a quick break. We are talking about long-term care on Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Today on the program, we are talking about long-term care services and support in Maine. Joining me for the hour, Megan Walton, who is the CEO of Southern Maine Agency on Aging, Brenda Gallant, who is Executive Director for the Maine Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program, and Paul Saussier, Director of the Office of Aging and Disability Services for the state. You can share your comments and questions in a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org, comment on our Facebook page or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. On the line with us now is Angela Westhoff, who is president and CEO of the Maine Healthcare Association. Angela, thank you so much for giving us a call. And I'm wondering if you can help us explain how we got here, how we're hearing about so many nursing homes closing.
Yes, thank you, Jennifer. Thanks for the opportunity to call in. I would say that it's certainly the issue with staffing, as Brenda and Paul have mentioned already on the show, has been one of the most complicating factors. But really, it's a perfect storm. So reimbursement rates have not kept pace with the escalating costs of labor and just inflation. So that coupled with the most severe workforce crisis that the sector has experienced in over a decade has really unfortunately been the recipe for a perfect storm that has led to a lot of closures of nursing facilities in Maine.
We've been talking a lot about what might happen. You heard Paul talk about a new way of thinking about the payment system. What do you think of this future looking program that's supposed to start in January?
Yes, new rate reform model for nursing facilities beginning in January 2025. Maine Healthcare Association has been working closely with the Department of Health and Human Services to discuss points of agreement and points of disagreement with that proposed new model. We are hopeful that rates under the new system will be adequate to prevent future closures and preserve access to care.
Meantime, it's August. Are you worried that between now and January we could see even more closures?
It's absolutely possible. I think that the factors that have contributed to the number of closures won't be fixed anytime soon. Staffing is going to be very difficult to, quote, right the ship overnight. It's going to take a concentrated and collaborative effort, I think, both public and private entities coming together. And we really need to look at innovative ways for best practices for recruitment and retention of workers.
Angela, let me ask you, frame a question this way. If you had an aging loved one who you were looking for care for right now, what would you do?
Yeah, I absolutely do. I'm sure many of your listeners do, too. And I appreciate all of the opportunities and programs that both Megan and Paul have mentioned. I think it's really important to plan. Unfortunately, as a society, we don't like to talk about what happens as we age. Death is a taboo topic, but we really do need to be planning ahead and thinking about what is the best possible option for our loved ones. You know, everyone, Mainers are fiercely independent, aren't we? We like to age in place. We want to be in our homes. But as Paul mentioned, too, at some point, there may come a time when we're not able to do that safely or family members aren't able to care for us in our homes any longer. So we do really need to make sure that access to long-term care supports and services across the continuum are protected and preserved. Maine's population of older adults is only going to explode. It's going to more than double as we approach 2040. So this is something that we can't afford to not be planning for.
And before you go, Angela, I saw Megan nodding when you said plan. Mm-hmm. Is this something, Megan, that the agencies on aging can help families do or help individuals do? I mean, keep saying families, but there are people out there who do not have children or cousins or nieces and nephews who might be helping them.
Absolutely. I mean, I think the more we normalize this and just like she said, include it in our daily conversation, the better. Your preferences, having a choice, making a plan, even though we know that something might happen or occur that is unplanned, the more your family members, your friends, your loved ones have discussed it and have things written down on paper, there's something on the refrigerator that says what your prescription drugs are. These things really matter because in that moment of crisis, anything you've already done, talked about, discussed is only going to help the family and the older individual in that situation. So let's normalize it.
Angela Westhoff with Maine Healthcare Association, thank you so much for giving us a call. And joining us now is Arthur Phillips, who is Economic Policy Analyst with the Maine Center for Economic Policy. Arthur, thank you for calling in. And already Brenda Gallant has referred to the most recent research that your group has done. Talk to us about what you found. What is the scope of this issue?
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. In our latest report, we really sought to measure the gaps in care that people, the gap between care that people are approved for and entitled to through these public programs and what they're actually receiving. And so this ranged from nursing homes to home care for older adults to supports and services for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities in all kinds of settings. And we found that really there are thousands of people in Maine who don't receive the services they qualify for or don't receive all of the hours for which they're approved. So, you know, one example, we found that in home care for older adults, as of December of last year, there were more than 23,000 hours of unstaffed care every single week. And about two-thirds of that was for personal support services and about one-third of it for nursing care. You know, we've talked a little bit, or you and your guests have talked about the nursing home closures. You know, we've lost roughly 20% of our nursing homes in the past 12 years compared to, you know, nationwide, I think about 5% of nursing homes have closed. And some counties in Maine have actually lost all of their nursing home capacity. And so, you know, we looked at these gaps and we kind of estimated based on what we found from a variety of sources that we need a minimum of 2,300 additional people in this kind of broad direct care workforce just to provide the care that people are already approved for through these programs. But then when you account for the high rate of turnover in these jobs, and of course our state's demographic trends of growing older in the coming decades, we think we're going to have to hire many times that number of people in the coming years. And so that's going to, you know, require bolder policy steps to raise the standards of those jobs to attract and retain those people.
Arthur, over and over again here on Maine Calling, we're doing a program that the one of the backstories or one of the underlying issues is not enough people. How does this sector of our economy find enough people when no one is finding enough people?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, last year we did a separate report that really looked at kind of the broad economic costs of undervaluing direct care work. We found that approximately 8,000 workers were out of the labor force due to care responsibilities. And we know that there are many more workers who juggle work and care for a loved one because they don't have access to professional care. And those people are in the labor force, but maybe they're cutting back their hours or they're not being as productive at work. So this is having really tremendous impacts on our economy. We estimated that it cost the economy around $1 billion in economic output each year.
So it has a snowball effect. People are dropping out of the workforce because they're caring for someone, and therefore someone else somewhere doesn't have the worker that they need because that person has dropped out of the workforce.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I think this workforce, direct care workers, are really somewhat uniquely placed so that the more that we can actually build up this workforce, the more support we're going to have for everyone else in the labor force who wants to stay in their jobs, wants to continue in their careers and contributing to the economy.
Well, thank you so much. That was Arthur Phillips, economic policy analyst with the Maine Center for Economic Policy. We will go to Elle. Elle's calling from Turner. Hi, Elle. Go ahead.
I have just two thoughts. One thought is this. Child care workers receive an additional stipend each month just for doing the child care work because it was so hard to obtain child care workers. And that might help. I think the lack of workers issue is there's no people. There's not enough. I mean, everybody's trying to hire for everything, and there's just not enough people. But in this particular arena, one of the things that I've seen happen in other parts of healthcare is nurses from other countries, particularly from the Philippines. They get visas and come to the States to fill gaps in, you know, nursing care, in the number of people that they have available.
Sure. So, yeah, Elle, thank you. A couple ideas there. Stipends and also people from other countries. Brenda, what would you like to say to Elle?
I agree. I think we really need to be aggressive because of the importance of workforce. And as you've heard from Arthur, there are people waiting. And when people are in the community, for example, and they can't get home care services, then they have to seek assistance to get into a facility. We're seeing a lot more people coming to the Ombudsman program, asking for assistance in terms of finding placement in residential care or nursing homes. Those in prior years, we had very few people come to us with that request. It's been increasing. So we really need to invest in the workforce to be able to, you know, maintain the services that we have. And I think when I, in terms of dealing with workers, what I hear from them is wages, benefits, and additional benefits like childcare on site, and even maybe a credit toward housing could make a huge difference, because we hear a lot about issues around the cost of housing. So I think we're going to have to be very creative and aggressive. And I just wanted to make a quick point that we're working with the department on a recruitment and retention project. We're seeking grant funding. We want to work with providers, both in Maine and nationally, to come up with a project that providers can implement to reduce their reliance on agency staffing in nursing homes, to reduce costs and improve care. So there is work really ongoing in terms of looking at workforce. But again, I think we have to be very aggressive to make a real difference.
Yeah. And Paul, when Elle was talking about workers from the Philippines, I'm thinking that she's talking about sort of visa programs. But I wanted to ask you, so far and in the future, what has been the importance of new Mainers, immigrants who have come to Maine, in filling these jobs?
Very important, particularly in southern and western Maine, where there are more new Mainers. We've seen successful programs at places like the Cedars, which is a nursing home in the Portland area that did a focused recruitment effort around training new Mainers. And we are seeing that they are a growing portion of the workforce, no question about it. I would just reinforce that retention is, we really need to double our efforts there, because there aren't a lot of new people, even with the new Mainers, even with, recent in-migration into Maine, which is good. We can't continue to have 40, 50% turnover rates, which is what we're seeing at many of these agencies and nursing homes.
We'll go to Jean calling from Poland. Hi, Jean, go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. I noticed your program was framed in terms of how do we help families provide support and care for their aging loved ones. And so I wanted to call attention to the solo agers, the 20 to 25% of older Mainers who are aging without families to help provide support and care. And my experience is that agencies and organizations that frame their mission as helping families are often not well prepared to help older Mainers who actually are trying to plan ahead for their own needs.
Jean, it's a really great point, and I'm going to turn to Megan to respond to that. Go ahead, Megan.
Yeah, thank you so much for highlighting that, because you're right. There are a number of individuals who are solo agers, and you know, we've talked a lot about the more formal systems of care so far this hour, and I just want to highlight that there are so many more informal systems of care that are really working upstream before that crisis happens. Everything from churches, community centers, your book club, where you live and who you're interacting with, really small relationships and really small activities can make a huge difference when you think about eventually needing more care or getting connected to care. The more people that, again, have eyes on our community members, know what's going on, can help take the trash out, can help with snow removal and small things, the better. And I think that's one of the best parts about Maine. There's just such a neighbor to neighbor kind of connection here. And again, let's start by looking out for each other and being aware of both formal and informal systems of care.
And one thing else I was thinking, Megan, and I'll go to you in just a second, Paul, is that we were talking before about planning, and for everybody it's important to plan, but I'm imagining that for somebody who's a solo ager, it's even more important, because if there's an emergency, if someone, God forbid, hits their head and is knocked unconscious, if somebody declines quickly into dementia or Alzheimer's, they will more benefit from having a plan in place, having something in writing, whether it's on the refrigerator door or in a file cabinet, than anyone else.
Exactly. And again, I think, you know, individuals who have called in this hour, whether they are a family member or a solo ager, you have a voice, and our legislators are going to care about what you care about. So we have a real opportunity, again, just to build a stronger, better future as we all age.
And Paul, go ahead.
Thank you. Yeah, Megan mentioned neighbor to neighbor, and I wanted to mention the Cabinet on Aging's Community Connections Project, which is $2.5 million. We are blessed in Maine to have almost 100 lifelong communities. These are communities that have made a commitment to, largely on a volunteer basis, work to strengthen that social fabric for older people in rural communities. And Jean's call really brought this to mind for me, because those communities are probably especially important for people who are alone, who don't have family or close friends nearby, who are thinking about them, helping them plan. Lifelong communities can do that. And this project partners them with the area agencies on aging to try to get more support at that informal level.
Jean, thank you for your call. We do need to take another quick break. We're talking about long-term care on Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Today on the program, we are talking about long-term care services in Maine. My guest, Megan Walton, with the Southern Maine Agency on Aging, Southern Maine Agency on Aging, Paul Sozier with the Office of Aging and Disability Services, and Brenda Gallant with the state's Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program. Join our conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, or post to Facebook or Instagram. We'll go to Tracy, who is calling from Saco. Hi, Tracy. Go ahead.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi. My name is Tracy, and I have a father who has Parkinson's, and we had to, the cost, my family is in Colorado and in Maine. And we had to uproot him and move him to Colorado, because Maine has the highest long-term care cost in all 50 states. So here in Maine, it was going to be $8,700 for him to be in a an assisted living would go on to graduate to long-term care, and it's only $3,300 in Colorado. So that was really hard, because my children and I had to send my father across the country, and we don't get to see him as much anymore.
Oh, Tracy, I'm sorry to hear that. And Paul, you're nodding. Maine does have high, despite what we've been talking about, despite that we need to pay people more and all the other challenges, we're more expensive than everyone else in the country?
Yes. Oh, I'm not sure about the exact statistic, but we definitely don't rank well on affordability. And thank you, Tracy, for your call. And I assume that your family is paying privately for this care. AARP does a scorecard of states on how good their long-term services and support systems are. Maine ranks 16th best, which, you know, is good. We can definitely get it better. And where we score really well is in the continuum of care that we've been talking about, in terms of having all of the services that Megan and others coordinate right through nursing home. Where we score poorly is on affordability. And that has to do in part with the median income in Maine being lower than many states, and the LTSS costs being higher. So that makes it very out of reach for many families, which is why the public programs are so important.
Tracy, thanks for your call. We'll go to Jill, who's calling from Damariscotta. Hi, Jill, go ahead.
Hold on. Hi there. I just wanted to take it off speaker.
Thank you.
I've been on both sides of the board. I was I'm a home care worker with a degree in nursing and massage. I got sick 15 years ago. I was 55, and I had home care, and I also had disability. Now I am 70 without a diagnosis. I've sold a house, tried to get medical help, but then I lost my insurance. I was penalized. And so then I grabbed another place, and I've been sicker and sicker. And now I'm living in a camper without any bathroom or whatever. But I have literally knocked at every single door in every single agency in every single church group. I mean, I've called Osbottom. I've called Spectrum and Excellent Aging. I've called all of them. But I was also in the healthcare field. And I'm in bed 90% of the time.
Oh, Jill, I'm so sorry. And Brenda, I mean, it sounds like it's just such an awful situation for Jill. And then being in bed, she doesn't have the energy to be advocating for herself.
So she certainly could call our office. It's area code 207-621-1079 or 1-800-499-0229. And we would be glad to talk with her and see what we could do to provide her with information and support.
All right, Jill, and I will repeat those phone numbers, and Brenda, you can nod if I've jotted them down correct. Either the 207 number, which is 621-1079, or 1-800-499-0229, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, and good luck. Good luck to you, Jill, and thank you so much for calling in. I'm so sorry to hear your story. We will go, there's a thunderstorm outside. I'm sure you all can hear it, to David in Walpole. Hi, David, go ahead.
Hi, I'm calling with regard to a federal program, actually, but it speaks to this issue. I have managed to keep two loved ones at home and to care for them over 8 years. Of care, but I could not have done it without the family provider service option offered through DHHS, which pays a family member or somebody close to a family to take care of their loved one in the home. So I just wanted to be sure that people who are in need are familiar with the family provider service option.
David, thank you so much for mentioning that. And Paul, what does somebody need to do to qualify for that?
All of our home care programs offer a family provider service option, and I really thank David for bringing it to people's attention. It's part of the answer for the workforce problem. If you're unable to find an agency that can provide home support, but you are willing to do it, you might need to leave your job in order to do it, and so you can be paid to provide that care. It's an alternative to the traditional agency support, and we have seen it grown as agencies are doing their best but can't keep up with the demand despite the expansion of services in that sector.
David, thank you. We'll go to Heather. Heather's calling from Wiscasset. Hi, Heather, go ahead.
Hi, thank you so much for having this program today. I've been listening, and I have, you know, a few different words thrown around a lot. Workforce, you know, $8,700 a month in Maine for nursing homes. Coming from a background of years of as a home health care aide, also a CNA, CRMA in nursing homes providing care, I had to move professions only because of the pay. I loved my job. I loved caring for others. But with the hands-on all the way down to these people, PCAs, CNAs, this is a real struggle to provide for these people as a job and also maintain income for their households. A lot of these people in the positions I've heard all around the state are switching out. They can't afford it. How is this considered in the $8,700 a month to live in a nursing home? There's obviously other costs, but this needs to trickle down to those that are taking care of the people.
Yeah, you know, let's talk about that. Who wants to take on that one, Brenda?
I'm not sure I can answer that. I certainly agree with higher wages, but I'm not sure I can answer it.
When we calculate this number of how much it costs, I think Heather's feeling kind of disbelieving and thinking, well, wait, where's this money going? And what would you say to her, Paul?
Well, through the rate reform process that we talked about earlier in the show, and thank you, Heather, for the comment, it's mostly labor costs. And of course, it's not only direct care workers who are probably receiving the lowest wage in the facility, but it's nurses. And in recent years, you know, we're seeing about 25% of the total hours delivered in nursing homes are contract staff, which are far more expensive than permanent staff. So there are a lot of things driving the cost. I do think these are legitimate costs. I mean, we can see it when we look at the cost reports that the nursing homes submit to us. Everything has become more expensive, but the biggest cost factor in a nursing home is the labor.
Heather, thanks so much for calling in. Let's see, we will go to Barbara, who's calling from Hancock County. Hi, Barbara, go ahead.
Hi, thank you. So for many years, when I lived in Massachusetts, I was the executive director of a nonprofit facility in Boston. Prior to that, I had been the executive director of an advocacy agency, also a nonprofit, for nursing and rest home residents. And they were the people that let us know what was wrong, what needed to be done, and we would help them inform legislators as to what legislation needed to happen to make their lives better. I do want to say that the for-profit homes make a lot of money, and they have accounting ways of doing that, and the information's not easily accessible as to how they very cleverly it looks like costs are going to another organization or paying another business, and they're not. They own the business themselves. So they make a lot of money. I never met a poor for-profit facility manager or owner in Massachusetts. But what I want to say also is that when I went to Scandinavia to study long-term care, I did see nursing homes in Sweden that were town nursing homes, like schools. The people in the town paid local taxes to run a facility, to have this facility be available for their older citizens, just like they did for their children going to schools. And they were wonderful places. And people were in and out all the time, their family, their former neighbors. There were all kinds of activities that happened within the facility. You didn't even know you were in a facility. Nurses didn't wear uniforms. They didn't sit at a desk behind glass. It was very home-like. It was very caring and very loving, and they were trying to get some people in who were recent immigrants to help with the labor force to work there. But I think we need to start thinking out of the box. This has been a problem forever, and I think a lot of it has to do with the corporate mentality that nursing homes, like other healthcare, have. In Massachusetts, a lot of hospitals and doctors' groups are being bought by private equity. We know how that ends. So we have to really be thinking about people who are aging as part of our community, as who
sure.
we are.
Sure, a lot there. Megan, I'll start with you. This idea of thinking out of the box, or example of what happens in some parts of Scandinavia.
Oh, amen. I mean, again, think about what you want when you grow old and when you do need additional care and as your needs increase. I love the options she's throwing out there, because we really have to envision a completely different community and a completely different Maine. I also just want to highlight that there are some lower cost options available, again, in people's communities. So we've talked about nursing care, institutional care. I am a big fan of adult day programs, senior centers, community centers, options that happen in people's communities, in group activities, which helps with staffing because you don't need a one-to-one ratio all the time. Great option for families, often keeps people at home much, much longer. Highlighting again our family caregivers, we have an estimated 166,000 unpaid family caregivers here in Maine. Let's do more to support them. The state has already done this with the fantastic Respite for Me grant and pilot program we've had. It's really brought more unpaid family caregivers out of the woodwork and ways that we can help them and assist them. And if you are a local business owner or you work for a corporation, start asking what benefits are available to you as a family caregiver, because we have to change our employer's mindset, keep people employed longer, make sure that they can support mom or dad or their sibling or their spouse and stay employed. It's so important here in Maine.
And Paul, I know we just have about a minute left. You wanted to talk about community services.
Yes, and just I wanted to underscore that despite all of these challenges, and the home care sector has been hit by COVID hard and is fragile along with nursing homes, and yet what we've seen in Maine is an expansion of the community services since 2019, which is pretty remarkable. We've seen about 30% more spending in that sector, and it's serving about 20% more people than in 2019. So thank goodness for the organizations that that Megan oversees and works with. I also wanted to make the point that we're lucky to have a long-term care ombudsman in Maine that covers the whole continuum, not only nursing homes. And so Brenda's office is able to do their advocacy across the board.
Well, I want to thank Barbara for her call, and I want to thank all our guests today. And I'm feeling a little grateful right now that this really big thunderstorm that's right over the studio has not knocked us off the air. So thank you, Brenda Gallant, Executive Director of the state's Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program. Paul Saussier, you just heard, Director of the Office of Aging and Disability with Maine's Department of Health and Human Services. And Megan Walton, CEO of the Southern Maine Agency on Aging. Today's sound engineer was Sam Tracy. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. You can go to mainecalling.org to sign up for our free weekly newsletter. If you'd like to find out what's coming up next week, every Friday, sign up again at mainecalling.org. You can also go on to wherever you get your apps and sign up for the Maine Public Vox Pop app, a great way to lend your voice to any show. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.